Good morning. This is Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. Well, all good things must come to an end, and so it goes for our weekly series on the U.S. Census Atlas. Each Thursday, we've been speaking with Mark Perry about the book, the first big atlas that the U.S. Census has published in many years. Mark is the chief of the Population Distribution Branch at the U.S. Census, and he was one of the main editors of this new atlas. Mark, Brian's out, so I get to say hello and goodbye to you at the same time. Welcome back.
Great. It's nice to be here.
As always, we've posted a slideshow of the maps we're going to be discussing today on our website, so you can go to WNYC.org, click on the Brian Lehrer Show, and follow along online. Of course, you don't have to be looking at the maps. Mark does a great job of describing them to us. Mark, we're going to get into some of the more curious maps found in this atlas today, but now, first, let's get to a couple of the lingering questions that have come up over the past month. We had several readers, listeners ask a very simple question we neglected to ask you. How do you choose the colors for the maps?
Oh, that's a great question. In part, it depends on the data. If we have data like some of the maps today that we're going to be looking at are basically categories. And so when we use categories where the different categories aren't so much related to each other, we try to use very distinct colors like, you know, red, blue, green, et cetera, so that it's easier to view on the map and you can see the patterns. Some of the maps that we've looked at in the previous weeks, if we're just showing sort of ranges of percentages, we'll stick with one basic color palette and then just use sort of lighter and darker shades of it.
The other thing we haven't been mentioning is that this entire atlas is available for free download as PDF files from your website. Why the decision just to put it online and give it away?
Well, I mean, it's publicly available data, largely, and we wanted to go with a print product because we still believe there's a place in the world for print products like this. But we also recognize that, you know, this is 2008, so people want to have... They want to be able to look at their maps and download and zoom in on some of them from home. So we tried to sort of strike a balance that way.
Now, if you want the whole atlas, where can you get it? Can you go into a bookstore and buy it?
Well, in some cases you can. I know there's an atlas store in Cambridge, Mass. That has a copy for sale.
They probably got it from a radio station that had it as a promotional copy.
They were actually one of the first purchases.
All of the copies here at WNYC have been hotly fought over and claimed.
Well, that's good to hear. You can, in all seriousness, you can actually buy it through the GPO website. I would say to just do a search of GPO bookstore online and Census Atlas, something like that, and it should take you to it.
All right, Mark Perry, let's go to the maps. And once again, if you are near a computer, you can follow along with us by clicking on the Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org, and then you can click on the maps. And the first map in the category, once again, is quirky or curious maps, is housing, fuel, and plumbing in 1950. And, Mark, I'm seeing a big purple block in the lower right-hand corner. I'm seeing a big green area in the Midwest, some blue up in the Northeast. Tell me, what does this map tell you?
This is a map showing how people heated their homes in 1950. And that big purple block is where they were primarily heating with wood. Those green areas across the country are where they were heating with coal. And those orange areas were where they were heating with utility gas. And the blue areas are fuel oil.
So we're looking at the most common type of fuel used by households in 1950. Does this information surprise you at all?
Well, it does in some ways. For instance, one of the quirky little things is there's one pesky little county out there in southern Nevada that's yellow. And that shows that they were heating with electricity. And you might say, well, why were they doing that? Why only one county? And then you sort of think about it and say, oh, that's where Hoover Dam is. And sure enough, Hoover Dam was supplying lots of electricity to Clark County back in 1950.
But why only to that area? I mean, isn't the point of a dam that it generates electricity for a lot of areas?
Well, sure. 1950, it was starting. And certainly, you know, in later decades, it sort of spread to other areas as well.
So let's look at the update on this map, the most common type of fuel used by households in 2000. And yep. You still see in the Northeast, big blue, but the rest of the map is different colors. Tell us about that.
Sure thing. Well, first off, you don't see any more green on the map. So there is there's no more coal. Coal is not the most common heating fuel source in any county in the United States, and there's very, very few counties that are using wood. It's mainly some isolated counties out in the mountain states. Much of the country is orange, so that's utility gas, or yellow, which is electricity. But the Northeast is still fuel oil.
Now, what's the deal with that?
I'm not really sure. I mean, I'm from that area, so I can tell you it was normal for me growing up to have a fuel oil truck, you know, pull up in front of the house a couple of times during the winter. I've lived in other parts of the country, and now I can kind of see that's actually not how most people experience it.
Is it dirtier? Is it cheaper? Is it, you know, what do we know about fuel oil as a way of heating your home?
I don't think my mother would agree that it's cheaper. I'm not sure about the cleanliness or dirtiness aspects of it. It certainly is. The Northeast is really the only stronghold these days for that kind of heating source.
Does that make, and this may be beyond your area of expertise, but I'm wondering if it means that people who use fuel oil as opposed to these other sources of electricity are more or of heating are more subject to the sort of, you know, price increases of the oil market?
Well, I mean, I think it's partly a reflection of the characteristics of the housing. There's not a lot of new housing in most parts of the Northeast, so you know, people are going to be heating their homes basically the way they were 30 or 40 years ago when those homes were first built. And so that's certainly one of the stories here, is that if your housing is pretty old, the way you heat it is likely not going to change too much.
My guest is Mark Perry. We're talking about U.S. Census maps. You can find them online at WNYC.org. Click on the Brian Lehrer Show. The number is 646-778-3729 if you want to get in on the conversation, if you are seeing anything interesting in these colored maps. Now, Mark, what is the deal with this sort of kind of B-clef-shaped purple area in the Southwest? It looks to me like a little bit of Nevada. What is that?
That's an area where they're heating with wood. There are several Native American reservations and a fairly substantial tribal influence there. And I suspect that's at least part of the story going on.
Now, what accounts for the regionalization of this map?
It's a bunch of things. I mean, certainly, I think... this map is partly reflecting population growth. So, for instance, in the Southeast, where you don't see any counties heating with wood anymore, there are probably still quite a few households that are heating with wood, but they're in the minority now. So all the newer housing, you're not building building housing units anymore where you're going to have wood as your heating source. So it's in some ways, some of these areas where they still have wood, those are areas that just don't have a lot of new housing.
Now, if you think about the Southeast, it's probably not an area of the country that even needs much in the way of heat.
Well, I mean, it still gets sort of chilly. I mean, in the mountain areas of North Georgia.
What about this little fuel oil county in, what is that, Northern California, way up north?
They're using fuel oil there.
Why?
It looks, I'm not sure. It might be in part a small numbers issue. There may not be too big a population in that county, but it looks like they are fuel oil users.
Let's go to the next map. This is households without telephone service, and this is actually two maps side by side. Yep. Households without telephone service in 1970, households without telephone service in 2000. Mark Perry, what do these maps tell you?
Well, this is part of a series. We looked at households that had that didn't have telephone service in 2000 and then several earlier points in time. The story here, I think there's a couple things to say. One is that even as recently as 1970, and I don't think of that as too far back historically, but even in 1970...
So Nixon was president.
Yeah, he was president, I was born, and 13% of households didn't have telephone service, which is... That kind of shocks me. That's the U.S. rate overall. There were some states in the South and the Southwest where more than 20% of the households didn't have telephone service. But then you sort of... skip forward to 2000, and the numbers are much smaller. I mean, telephone service today is almost ubiquitous. You know, there's a handful of states out there where there's maybe 2 to 3 to 4% without phone service, but it's nowhere what it was even as recently as 1970.
Well, it is striking that, you know, some areas went up to 32%, but even so, that there are still some areas of the country, I'm looking at the South, it looks like Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, some of the southeastern states, that it still even goes up to 6%. I mean, I think that, you know, if you sort of thought about it, you'd think, well, every house has a phone.
Yeah. And so, I mean, certainly it's glass half full, glass half empty. I mean, you can look at least everyone's in the single digits these days and not at the 20, 25, 30%.
I wonder if you look at this map in the 2010 census or the 2020 census, that you're going to have some more of these green areas because people are abandoning their landlines in some areas, especially younger people who have cell phones. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean it's certainly something that people talk about is sort of, you know, the younger generation just doesn't have any tradition of you know, what a landline is anymore, and sort of
or even the sense that I mean, you know, sort of iPod wireless computer generation, even the sense that you once had to be attached to a wall to be on a telephone comes as something of a shock.
Yes. Yes.
My guest is Mark Perry. We're talking about U.S. Census maps. You can join our exploration online if you like by going to WNYC.org and clicking on the Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. The phone number is 646-778-3729 if you want to call in with your comments on these maps, questions on census maps, or thoughts on what these trends might mean. And we will be back with more Mark Perry right after this. Good morning. This is Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. We're speaking to Mark Perry about the census.
I haven't taken the Census Bureau's last name, no.
We're speaking to Mark Perry about the census. We're looking at maps online at WNYC.org. If you'd like to join us, you can do so by clicking on the Brian Lehrer Show button. The map we're looking at now, the fourth map, is households without plumbing in 1970 and households without plumbing in the year 2000. Again, two side-by-side maps. Mark, what do you see?
I see a good story here that, you know, even in just as recently as 1970, 6.9% of households in the country didn't have full indoor plumbing.
That means no toilets, no sinks. They were using outhouses?
I believe so. And there's the Atlas itself has sort of all the technical documentation on what exactly constituted full plumbing. But certainly as recently as 1970, it was, you know, just under 7% didn't have plumbing. Fast forward to 2000.
But before we do that, I mean, it's looking to me, I mean, I do see two red states, which doesn't have the typical meaning. The red states are those with 20 to 24.3% no plumbing. What is that?
Kentucky.
Mississippi and Kentucky.
And Mississippi,
but
correct.
But it's interesting because the states that are sort of the darker orange, so that's about up to about 20% of those houses with no plumbing, there's a lot of them. There's Iowa and Minnesota and it looks to me like New Hampshire and Vermont. I mean, is that surprising to you?
Well, I mean, it kind of is. I mean, I don't think 1970 is too long ago. And yet, you know, that... I mean, it's sort of a good story when you think about it that, you know, that, I mean, we've definitely seen lots of improvements in housing just over the last 30 to 40 years.
Now, what is this tracking? Is this tracking poverty? Is it tracking the dates of when the houses were built?
It's a few things. I mean, certainly, you know, it's a reflection of poverty. It's also a reflection that, you know, a lot of that housing from 1970, if it was substandard, it probably hasn't made it all the way to 2000. There were probably a lot of those places were either upgraded or demolished, so they're not part of the current housing stock. I mean, basically, housing has upgraded substantially in the last few decades.
Now, you've changed the scale in the 2000 map. So the sort of deeper orange states have 6.3% up to 6.3% without plumbing.
Correct.
But that includes New York.
It does. It does. It includes New York and a few other states in the Northeast. It's, you know, it's states all across
the country. So we're talking more than 1 in 20 households in New York have no plumbing as recently as the year 2000.
Correct.
And that is, I think, probably a higher number than some people would suspect.
It may be, yes. Yes.
My guest is Mark Perry, and our last map is the most common period during which housing units were built. Mark, what are we seeing on this map?
This map is sort of a summary of all different population growth trends that we've been talking about in sort of this week and previous weeks. So this is saying, you know, what was the most common period when the housing in a particular county got built? And so we have all kinds of categories from 1990 and later through the oldest categories before 1940. And so what you see is all those yellow areas across the country that's saying that the most common period the housing was built in that country, in that county, was before 1940.
And that's, we're looking at the Northeast, we're looking at the Midwest mostly.
Across the Great Plains, scattered counties, even down to Texas and out in the mountain states, et cetera.
But if you're looking at California, Florida, the Southeast, the Northwest, many of these houses are brand new.
Yes, yes. So, I mean, the darkest counties are those with the most where most of their housing is very recently built. So that's lots of counties in the Southeast, most of Arizona, Nevada, parts of Utah, et cetera.
My guest is Mark Perry of the U.S. Census. 646-778-3729 is the phone number. I'm Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. We're talking about census maps. Mark, what do you think this tells us about our country and about regional divisions? When we look at a map like this and we see so much new construction in the Southeast, in the Northwest, what should we be reflecting back from this?
Oh, I mean, all kinds of things, I suppose. I mean, certainly, I mean, housing is a reflection of population. So just as, you know, if we're looking at all these areas of new housing construction, you know, certainly the issues of sort of the nature of new housing versus old housing, how that housing is heated, where it's located. I mean, so many of the issues that we're hearing in the news recently about sort of, you know, commuting and commuting costs and you know, areas far from cities, the exurbs are hurting these days because of expensive gasoline. You know, housing encapsulates so many different issues. So, I mean, this map is just getting at sort of the age of it, but it sort of reflects on those other ones as well.
We've been talking about politics earlier this hour, and I'm wondering if this housing map and the sort of, you know, changes that we saw with the Southeast in particular, I think, is one of the sort of most startling. No plumbing, using a lot of wood heat as recently as 1970, so that's 38 years ago, and now being this sort of, you know, booming indigo area with all of this new construction. Does it tell us something that we should be thinking about?
Well, certainly. I mean, one of the stories from all of the historical maps in the Atlas, and there's about 10% of the maps in this book are either 1990 or earlier maps. And we really, if you don't have historical content, it's hard to always sort of know how to look at a map. But the story from all the historical content is that the South has changed really in pretty tremendous ways, even just since 1950. So in the education chapter, if you look at maps of sort of changes in, you know, the percent of the population that graduated from high school, the changes in the South since then are tremendous. I mean, just you look at that map and get a real sense that the South has caught up in many ways to the rest of the country.
Is there any way in which these maps track racial lines? I mean, is this across the board in the South? Or if you sort of broke it down to, you know, areas with a high African-American population, would you still see older housing, more wood heat, some of those, or is it across the board?
Well, I mean, we haven't looked at in that sort of specific detail in the maps and the atlas. But certainly, yeah, there's, characteristics of housing vary across the board according to the people who live there. And so you'd see differences based on, you know, age, race, sex, household composition, et cetera.
Mark, we're just about out of time, but as we are wrapping up this series on the U.S. Census maps, any final or summary thoughts?
Well, I'd certainly encourage people to check out the full content online, whether it's at census.gov or actually purchasing a book. And we certainly welcome any comments and suggestions, like the ones that there have been some great insight left on the WNYC website. We are looking ahead to 2010 and beyond and maybe doing sort of companion products in the future.
Thanks so much, Mark Perry of
Thank
the
you
U.S.
For
Census
me.
For talking about the maps. I'm Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer, and we'll be back with your phone calls and more right after this.